Okay, so we're diving into Santa Clara Pueblo v. Martinez today. The Supreme Court case from 1978, it really kind of gets at like the heart of a debate that's still going on in federal Indian law. Like, can tribal members actually sue their tribe in federal court if they think their civil rights have been violated? You sent over a ton of material on this, and it seems like the answer is a lot more complicated than just like a yes or a no.
It's a really cool case because it makes you think about like tribal sovereignty, you know, like the tribe's right to kind of govern themselves. But then also like how do you balance that with the individual rights of the people who are members of that tribe? It's this really interesting like legal tightrope walk. And Santa Clara Pueblo, this case, it like set the stage for how we deal with this stuff even now.
Yeah. To really like wrap our heads around it, we kind of need to start with the human side of this whole story, right?
Yeah.
So tell me about Yulia Martinez and what even started this legal battle.
Absolutely. So Julia Martinez, she was a member of the Santa Clara Pueblo, and she married someone who wasn't a member of her tribe. He was Navajo.
Okay.
And, you know, this might seem like just a personal thing, but it set off all these other things because the Santa Clara Pueblo, they had this ordinance. It was from way back in 1939.
Oh.
And this ordinance, it basically said that if a woman from the tribe, if she married outside the tribe, her kids, they wouldn't be considered members. But if a man married someone outside the tribe, his kids, they would still be members.
So there was this like difference right from the start based on gender in how they decided who was a member. That seems like a problem.
Yeah, you're totally right. And this wasn't just some kind of like theoretical thing. It really impacted Julia's kids. Since they weren't members, they couldn't vote in tribal elections, they couldn't like hold office, they couldn't inherit property.
Oh, wow.
And here's the big one. If Julia died, her kids, they wouldn't even be allowed to live on the reservation.
That's really harsh. It's like they were being told they don't belong, they don't have a heritage just because of who their mom married.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that's a core part of what was being argued in this case. The Pueblo, they defended this ordinance, you know? They said it was super important to keep their cultural identity, like it was part of their sovereignty, their right to govern themselves. They said that, like, defining membership was essential to holding on to their traditions and way of life.
So they were saying, this is how we define ourselves as a people. It's our right, even if it affects individual rights.
Right.
But Julia obviously felt like her children's rights were being violated. What did she do? Like, how did she try to fight this?
Well, she spent years trying to challenge this ordinance, like within the tribe, but it didn't work. So she did something pretty bold. She filed a lawsuit in federal court.
I bet that's where things got really interesting, legally speaking. So what happened once this case ended up in the federal court system? Did they agree that the ordinance was, discriminatory?
Well, the case first went to a U.S. district court, and they said they had jurisdiction because of the Indian Civil Rights Act, or the ICRA. It's a federal law, and it gives certain civil rights to Native Americans on reservations.
Okay.
So the court said the ICRA applied, but they ended up siding with the Pueblo. They upheld the ordinance.
Oh, wow.
But then Julia appealed. It went to the 10th Circuit, and they reversed what the district court said.
Okay.
They used something called like strict scrutiny on this ordinance, you know, because it was treating men and women differently. And they basically said the Pueblo didn't have a strong enough reason for that kind of discrimination.
So it sounds like Julia's side was like starting to make some progress at this point. This can't be the end of the story, though, right?
No, definitely not. The Supreme Court decided they wanted to hear the case.
Of course they did.
But they weren't really focused on whether the ordinance was discriminatory or not. They wanted to look at a much bigger question. Should federal courts even be handling this kind of dispute?
Ah, so they were like, hold on, let's talk about who gets to make decisions here. It became less about the ordinance itself and more about the power dynamic between tribal governments and the federal government.
Exactly. And that's where this case, Santa Clara Pueblo v. Martinez, becomes so important in federal Indian law. The Supreme Court, they were grappling with these really big ideas about jurisdiction and tribal sovereign immunity. Like this idea that tribes are, in a way, protected from some lawsuits.
Okay, I'm starting to get why this case is a big deal. So,
Yeah.
like, what were the exact questions the Supreme Court was trying to answer? And, like, what was their decision?
So they were trying to figure out three main things. First, does the ICRA, does it even let federal courts review tribal laws?
Right.
Second, does it actually give people like Julia the right to sue their tribe in federal court?
Mm.
And lastly, does tribal sovereign immunity, does that just completely block this kind of lawsuit?
Those are some serious questions. It sounds like the very idea of tribal self-governance was being like examined.
Yeah. And you want to know what the court said?
I do. What did they say?
To all three questions, no. They were firmly on the side of tribal sovereignty, and that decision has had an impact that we still see today.
Wow, a triple no from the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
That's definitely sending a message. But I'm sure, like, their reasoning for saying no is important. Can you break it down for us? Like, how did they get to that decision?
So the majority opinion, Justice Marshall wrote it, and it's pretty interesting. He was really emphasizing that tribes are, like, independent political communities, and he even put that in quotes.
Oh, wow.
They have this inherent power to govern themselves, you know? He was saying that, like, federal courts, they shouldn't get involved in tribal affairs unless Congress specifically says, hey, you can get involved in this.
So it sounds like the court was, like, super careful about respecting tribal sovereignty. They didn't want to, like, overstep.
Exactly. And to back that up, they looked at the actual words in the ICRA, that Indian Civil Rights Act. The only way to fix things that's specifically mentioned in the ICRA, it's something called habeas corpus. It deals with, like, if someone's being held illegally. But for other stuff, you know, like tribal membership rules, the ICRA, it doesn't actually say you can sue your tribe in federal court.
So they were saying Congress was really specific about how to fix things under the ICRA and suing for every possible violation that wasn't included.
Oh, right. Justice Marshall, he was really making the point that these kinds of disputes, they should be dealt with in tribal courts.
Oh.
It's like a basic principle of tribal sovereignty, you know. But not everyone on the court agreed with this.
Oh, there was a dissenting opinion. I always want to hear what the other side has to say. What did they argue?
Okay, so Justice White, he wrote the dissent, and he argued that the whole point of the ICRA was to protect people's individual rights, like within the tribe. Mm-hmm. He felt like even though the ICRA doesn't specifically say it, there's this implied right to sue. His view is basically if Congress creates these rights, then courts have to enforce them, you know? Doesn't matter if the law, like, spells it out word for word.
So you have this clash between two really important ideas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tribal sovereignty and then individual rights.
Yeah.
And the court ultimately sided with tribal sovereignty, even if it meant maybe limiting some people's ability to, like, get justice when they feel their rights were violated.
Exactly. And that clash, it's why Santa Clara Pueblo v. Martinez is still so important. It brings up these really tough questions about how we balance the need for tribal self-governance with protecting individual rights in those communities. It's a debate that's still going on, like, in legal circles and in politics.
It reminds you that these legal decisions, they aren't just, like, abstract ideas. They affect real people, like Julia Martinez and her kids. So what happened after the Supreme Court made its decision? What impact did it have on other cases that were, like, similar?
Santa Clara Pueblo v. Martinez, it really solidified tribal sovereign immunity, made it a core part of federal Indian law. It basically said, okay, federal courts, you can't get involved in tribal matters unless Congress gives you very specific permission.
So it's like drawing a line in the sand.
Yeah.
But that must have had a pretty big impact on tribal members who feel like their rights are being violated. If they can't just go to federal court, like, what can they do?
That's a really important point. After Santa Clara, the main thing for tribal members to understand is if their tribe does something that violates their rights under the ICRA, their options for going to federal court, they're limited. Basically, they can only use habeas corpus, that thing we talked about earlier, for, like, unlawful detention. For other violations, they would have to go through the tribal court system.
That seems potentially problematic, you know. What if someone's claiming discrimination or some other really serious violation? Are tribal courts always set up to handle those kinds of cases fairly?
That's been a big criticism of the Santa Clara decision. People who criticize it, they say it creates this gap in civil rights protections for tribal members.
Yeah.
They point out that tribal courts might not have the resources or, like, the expertise or even be independent enough to handle these complicated civil rights cases.
Like a catch-22.
Yeah.
You have these rights that the ICRA guarantees, but it might be really hard to enforce them if it's your own tribe that's violating them.
Exactly. And people are still arguing about whether tribal courts can really handle these sensitive issues. Some experts and advocates, they think there needs to be more oversight from the federal government to make sure tribal members have real access to justice.
Okay.
They argue that relying only on tribal courts, it could put some people at risk, especially if the tribe itself is part of the problem.
It's a tough situation, trying to balance tribal sovereignty with making sure individual rights are protected.
It is.
So, this debate isn't going away anytime soon.
Nope. It's a complicated issue, and there are good points on both sides. You have this super important need to respect tribal self-governance, but then also you got to make sure everyone has access to a fair system when their rights are violated, no matter what tribe they're part of.
It sounds like finding that balance is an ongoing process.
It is. And Santa Clara, even though it set a strong precedent for tribal sovereignty, it also started a conversation that's still going on about how to protect individual rights in tribal communities.
It seems like this case forced everyone to really confront these tough questions and try to find a way forward.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And it shows how dynamic federal Indian law is. It's always changing as courts and lawmakers try to figure out how to balance these different interests. There's always room for different interpretations and like rethinking things.
This whole area of law is so interesting.
It is.
We've just scratched the surface. But before we wrap up, I want to ask our listeners something, especially the lawyers and law students out there. Imagine you're a tribal member and you feel like your rights have been violated. Would you feel okay, like comfortable, going only to the tribal court system for justice? What would be the good things, the bad things? After this case, it's something to really think about.
That's such a good question to ask, and it gets to the core of what we're talking about with Santa Clara, Pueblo v. Martinez. There are good arguments on both sides. Tribal courts, they have a big advantage. They really understand the tribe's culture, its traditions, so like they can look at cases within that context, which you probably wouldn't get in a federal court.
Right, it's like they have this built-in understanding of what the community values, what's normal for them. That could be a good thing for making sure justice happens in a way that makes sense for that tribe.
Yeah, exactly. And for tribal members, it's usually easier to get to a tribal court. They might be closer physically, and the way they do things might be more familiar, less scary, But we can't ignore the other side of things. Like we talked about earlier, there are real worries about whether tribal courts have what they need to handle these really complex civil rights cases. They might not have the money to pay for expert witnesses or for good lawyers.
It also makes you wonder about, like, how impartial they can be. If the tribe itself is involved in what went wrong, can a tribal court really be neutral? It's a tough question, and there's probably no easy answer.
You're right. It's a tough balance. Every case is different. There's no one way to balance tribal sovereignty and individual rights. It's this ongoing process, figuring out what works best for each situation. And Santa Clara Pueblo v. Martinez, it has definitely shaped how we think about these challenges.
Well said. So, for anyone listening, you're a lawyer, a law student, whatever, Santa Clara Pueblo v. Martinez is full of really important stuff about federal Indian law, tribal sovereignty, and trying to make sure there's justice within tribal communities. It's a case that makes you think hard about the balance between governing yourself and individual rights and how the law tried to deal with that.
Yeah, it's a case everyone should study if they want to understand this area of law. It's really interesting and important, too. Like any big legal case, the questions it asks are just as important as the answers it gives.
That's so true. We've covered a lot today, and it's obvious that this case is still sparking conversations and debates. For those of you who want to dig deeper, I'd say check out the case law, read up on what people are saying about this issue, all the different viewpoints.
It's worth the effort. Understanding Santa Clara Pueblo v. Martinez is key to understanding how tribal sovereignty works and what it means for Native Americans.
Well said. And on that note, we'll leave you with that to think about. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp and keep exploring the law. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.